Good evening, Emerald City. What's good? What's happening? Welcome back to the Boom Headshot Podcast. I have returned today with Mr. Edward the Tree. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
That's good. That's good. I am good. Currently, I was figuring I need a little update on Destiny. It's been a while since I've been on the game. So I was thinking maybe you could fill me in exactly on what's going on with some of the newest updates. What's coming out?
Well, presently, Season 15, Season of the Lost, has just dropped, and with it comes a story that's got me concerned. As most of us know, Season 16, coming out in February of 2022, with the launch of the Witch Queen DLC, features the Hive, goddess of trickery and cunning, Savathun, as the main antagonist. This season, though, we're working with her. So with the developments this season, Marsov has struck a deal with the Witch Queen that if Mara and her Techians are successful in exorcising Savathun's worm, then Savathun is supposedly going to lift the curse on the Dreaming City that's been in place for 3 years now? 2 years?
Right.
In order to do so, though, we need to track down Mara's Techians, who have been lost in the Ascendant Plane, and who are also being hunted by Zivu Arath, Savathun's other sister, the Hive Goddess of War. So, throughout the season, we, the Guardians, are going to be using Awoken technology and the ancient art of wayfinding to traverse the ley lines of the Ascendant Realm, find the Techians, and bring them home in order to exorcise Savathun's worm. Of course, we as the players know that that's going to go horribly south, as Savathun will soon be unleashing her new loosened brood of Hive Guardians in February. But for now, we're kind of being forced to work with her.
Fair enough. So, Savathun lifts the curse on the Dreaming City, right?
Theoretically.
How would she do that? Because, it's like, okay.
So, Savathun is the one that placed the curse on the Dreaming City to begin with. It was a Taken curse, and after Oryx was killed, the Taken were left temporarily without a leader. But while Oryx was still alive, there was a certain Vex mind by the name of Quiria that he took. He then gifted this Vex mind to Savathun. Those of you that have played Destiny in Season 14 may recognize Quiria to be the Dreaming Mind that was featured as the final antagonist of Season of the Splicers. Quiria, being a Taken Vex, and being a highly intelligent one at that, specifically designed by the Vex to understand the Hive sword logic, inherited Oryx's knowledge on the power to take. And that's how Savathun got control of the Taken. She used Quiria's knowledge of how to take, and then commanded Quiria to do exactly that. Savathun was then able to manipulate Quiria to control the Taken and create an army of them. The Taken curse then is what blighted the Dreaming City. Through Quiria and her effect on Riven, when Riven, the Ahamkara, was taken, and then Ahamkara used Ahamkara magic to inflict a time loop curse on the city. So that's the nature of the curse itself. As for how it will be resolved, Savathun is currently under the influence of the Pact of the Deep, which is the original Hive origin story, essentially. Back on the Hive homeworld moon of Fundament, the first Hive, Savathun, Oryx, and Zivu Arath, struck a deal with essentially the worm gods that were at the heart of Fundament. And in that deal that they made, they created the Pact of the Deep. They were influenced then by the darkness, implanted with the Hive worms that we see occasionally when we kill Hive, and they leave behind that little worm thing on the ground. And that's what essentially gives them their darkness powers, but if they go against the will of the darkness to destroy and continually take life, then the worm will kill them from the inside out. So we need to use Mara and her Techians to remove the worm safely from Savathun and destroy it, so that Savathun won't be under that Pact of the Darkness, won't be at risk of having the darkness retaliate against her, and she can freely manipulate the Taken curse back off the city.
That plan falls apart, though, we personally know, however, because Quiria is dead, meaning Savathun no longer has control over the Taken.
Right.
So that's kind of the situation with that. She says that she's going to remove the curse, but she really doesn't have any way of doing that without control of the Taken.
Right.
And currently the Taken are apparently under Zebu Arath's control. I personally have yet to figure that one out. I know there might be an example of lore somewhere that would indicate how Zebu Arath was able to take control of the Taken, but I haven't found that one myself.
Okay.
But that's neither here nor there when it comes to how Savathun plays into all this.
Right.
The fact is, Savathun doesn't have control over the Taken anymore, so I don't know how she's going to be able to remove the curse.
Yeah. I was wondering, though, because, like, yeah, I didn't understand how she was going to remove that, because, like, didn't we try at some point?
We tried for a long time to remove the curse by... the first thing was Last Wish Raid. That's what caused the curse in the first place, was killing Riven.
Right.
The Guardian's desire to protect the Dreaming City was then manipulated by Riven to put the Dreaming City into a time loop. And then Guardians began trying to figure out a way to break the curse by exploiting the loop. Since Guardians are paracausal and fall outside the influence of the time loop, we can actually change the way that each iteration of the loop runs. Problem is, we have yet to figure out a successful way to break the curse from the inside. Our closest attempt was the elimination of Dol Inkaru, the daughter of Savathun, who was the final boss of the Shattered Throne dungeon. Dol Inkaru was tasked with finding the Awoken Distributary, which is the Awoken origin world.
Right.
And in destroying Dol Inkaru, we kind of thwarted that plan, but the time loop brought her back to life. And so that's kind of what we're trying to do. We're trying to stop the curse by just knocking it out every loop. Every time the curse rolls around again, we're just essentially trying to stop Dol Inkaru from reaching the distributary.
Fair enough. Okay.
That's kind of the situation we find ourselves in.
Gotcha. Now, as far as, like the new updates, as far as, like, balance and stuff like that goes, what's your, like, main opinion on that stuff? Like, from, let's take it from, like, a PvE standpoint.
So, from a PvE standpoint, I personally haven't noticed all too much in the just neutral game, but I've noticed a new damage meta come to light in this new season because of some recent buffs to fusion rifles, as well as some like new mods that have been introduced both through seasonal artifacts and as well as the new Elemental Well mods and all that stuff. Some exotic changes that have been made this season. A couple things I have noticed, although they haven't really played too much of a role in my personal experience with the game. The changes to Dawnblade, of course, being big ones, and a big bone of contention for Warlock mains like myself, was the removal of the Dawnblade Warlock's second Icarus Dash when Heat Rises is not active.
Right.
Of course, the removal of that dash, otherwise only active with Heat Rises, means that Warlocks are a bit slower now. But I suppose that's fair, I guess,
right,
in a way. I guess Warlocks aren't supposed to be the fast ones.
Right.
That's
right.
Mainly for Hunters. But
well, we just head bounce. We just bump our heads on stuff.
Exactly.
Now, something I'm actually really curious about that I wanted to ask that I completely forgot about was I have not done testing myself, but I have a Warmind Cell build still that is really good, but I don't know if it's really good still, you know what I mean? Because like after the nerfs to him and everything, is it worth using, or should I just go charge with light with like Argent Ordnance or something?
That's a big one, because Warmind Cells did get hit very hard in this update. Their damage has been cut, I think, more than in half, and their range of effect is also a bit more limited now. That being said, what's the build?
It's... Okay, so it revolves around Bottom Tree Sunbreaker.
Okay.
Right.
Creation of Sunspots.
Yeah. I get the Sun Warrior, regens my nade, more explosions, because I use, what's it called? Wrath of Rasputin.
Mm-hmm.
So I use that, and there's, like, Global Reach, Burning Cells, and, Grasp of the Warmind, and the Power of Rasputin.
for damage. So most of my DPS phase revolves around, I make a sunspot, I stand in the sunspot, stick a warmind cell on, and do extra damage with that, pretty much. And there's obviously a lot of ad clear involved with it and stuff like that.
Yeah, so Grasp of Rasputin is still an effective mod. There was no changes made to that one, and it's actually even better now than it was before, because warmind cells do require a bit better placement. Whereas previously you didn't quite need Grasp of Rasputin, because you would just kill stuff in a room, wait for a warmind cell to pop up, and more than likely whatever you were trying to kill is going to be within range of the cell. Now it's a bit more limited in its range, so Grasp of Rasputin is good because it allows you to place a cell on a target.
Right.
Power of Rasputin, I don't think, received any nerfs to its damage. It obviously it no longer benefits from the extended range that warmind cells used to have, but again, with Grasp of Rasputin sticking it to a target, that's not a problem.
Right.
Wrath of Rasputin, generating warmind cells from solar abilities. Yeah, that's a good one. If you're not using a Seventh Seraph weapon, then that's your only way to generate warmind cells otherwise. What did you say it was? Global Reach and...
Global Reach.
Burning Cells?
Yeah, Burning Cells and... Yeah, Global Reach, okay. And Burning Cells, I think. If it's not Burning Cells, then it's the one that increases damage on solar explosions.
Oh, Rage of the Warmind.
Yeah, it's one of those two, but I can't...
Burning Cells or Rage of the Warmind. Those two, they kind of would clash with the build. Because solar Warmind Cell mods, like Burning Cells and Wrath and Rage of the Warmind, only activate when the Warmind Cell is destroyed and explodes. Whereas with the Void ones, like Grasp of the Warmind, Grasp of Rasputin, and Power of Rasputin, those two mods are only active as long as the Warmind Cell persists. So I feel like what's happening is you've gone a little too much for a jack-of-all-trades build, and you're losing out on some potential otherwise.
Right.
If you wanted to go with one that was good for damage, you could go Warmind's Longevity, which increases the duration of Warmind cells.
Okay.
That'd be a good one if you could get your hands on it.
Right.
Global Reach is still effective to a degree, because it will actually increase Warmind cell range back to, I think about to what Warmind cells used to be without Global Reach. The problem is you do have Grasp of Rasputin, so it's a bit redundant to have the ability to place a Warmind cell wherever you want, and then also still have the extended range on them.
Okay.
So, I'm not so sure about Global Reach. You might not need it. Because if you're placing a Warmind cell directly onto a target that you're trying to damage, then obviously they're going to be within its AoE without Global Reach anyway. The question is, what would you replace it with?
Yeah.
Longevity is technically already in the working build. The only other options would be Cellular Suppression, which could, in theory, work. One of the side effects of Cellular Suppression is that you do less damage to the Warmind cells that you create.
Right.
So that the side effect of it could actually help out if you're doing a damage phase against a boss that has a Warmind cell stuck to its face. Right. It would be a lot harder for your weapons to accidentally break the cell, thus losing the effect of Power of Rasputin. And plus, the suppression effect would be pretty strong. You could also do Warmind's Protection. That would reduce the damage being dealt by whatever you have the Warmind cell stuck to and everything else that's near it. So that would help you out on the other hand, because, you know, you're damaging a boss, but you're also being shot at by the boss. There's the risk of dying to him or any other nearby enemy. Protection of the Warmind would prevent that. It'd weaken the boss's damage output a bit.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to worry as much about where you were DPSing from.
Right. Okay, so... Yeah, so altogether, though, what would you say is, like, now, like, better? Like, elemental wells, like, cells, stuff like that? Like, how viable are they still, though?
Cells are very, very strong, but they're now a bit more situational than they used to be. You can no longer just wipe out an entire room with them. You have to be very careful with how you kill enemies and what order to get them to spawn where you want them to be. At the same time, though, they're still very strong. They do have really good damage. They can reach around corners to a degree. They're good for clearing out groups of enemies. Even if it's not clearing an entire room, you can still clear out a large group of tanky enemies with one.
Right.
And they still have really good support power if you're trying to go for boss damage with Power of Rasputin and Warmind's Longevity. They're still good for damage, especially because Power of Rasputin doesn't conflict with debuffs or buffs on either side, so it's just a pure damage boost.
Right.
That being said, it might still be better to go with certain charge with light mods in some cases.
Yeah. Well, what about, like, fusions? Because I really like running Merciless with, like, some form of rocket launcher.
So if you're running Merciless, at least for this season, there is the seasonal artifact mod.
Right.
What's it called? Particle Deconstruction. That's the one. Damaging a combatant with a fusion rifle decreases their... increases the damage they take from fusion rifles, stacking up a few times. So if you were to run just that mod on its own, in addition to Argent Ordnance from the Charged Light set to increase the damage of your rockets, that would be a pretty effective DPS build.
Right.
If you're using a fusion rifle, you could also use the Arc Charged with Light mod. I think it's Quick Charge? It's Quick Charge or Swift Charge, one of those two. Warmind's Charged with Light mod naming conventions have always been confusing. But one of them, though, one or the other, grants you a stack of Charged with Light from getting rapid kills with a fusion rifle. So that would allow you to use your fusion rifle to slay out in a room of enemies, get Charged with Light, and then you would have stacks of Charged with Light to use Argent Ordnance for damage.
Right. Okay. Because, like, I know Merciless is really good. I don't really care if it's how incredibly meta it is. I just like the weapon. I've always liked the weapon. But I never had any reason to use it at all, period, because it's a fusion rifle. So, like,
yeah.
But now if fusions are, like, viable enough to be, I didn't even care if they were meta, but if they're, like, viable enough to be used,
yeah,
I'll use it. You know what I mean? Like, I gotta get the catalyst. By the way, is there a glitch with the catalyst? Because, like, for some odd reason, I'm not getting progress fast. I don't know if that's just, like...
It's just that it takes a lot of kills with certain weapon catalysts to get them to complete.
Okay, fair enough. But yeah, I kind of was wondering about that type of stuff, because... Now, as far as, like, in your opinion, I know this is actually kind of controversial, because some people compare, like, the burst damage versus, like, the extended damage, all that stuff. But after the machine guns, where do they stand? Like, including, like, Thunderlord, Xenophage, stuff like that. Where do they stand as far as DPS goes?
Standard machine guns, just your classic legendary ones, are unparalleled when it comes to ad clearing for a heavy weapon. They're better than rocket launchers, they're better than grenade launchers for just killing an entire room of enemies very quickly and very ammo efficiently. Their damage being buffed also actually does make them a decent boss damage weapon. They're definitely not the best, but that's kind of the trade-off you get for that increased ad clearing potential. It's like, you know, with machine guns, you have virtually unparalleled ad control, and now with their most recent buff, you can still use them against bosses. You don't have to run a machine gun and then something else in your, like, in your loadout dedicated to dealing with powerful enemies, because now machine guns can still handle them.
Right.
Thunderlord takes that ad clearing potential to a whole new level, because with its lightning strikes, you can clear out groups of enemies with one bullet. Its damage, like its DPS on bosses, has been upped by a fair margin since it did inherit a little bit of that machine gun damage buff. And Thunderlord already wasn't a horrible weapon for DPS. It was still a pretty good one. It's essentially just Cloud Strike but a machine gun. Or I guess in a way, Cloud Strike is Thunderlord but a sniper rifle. That's neither here nor there. Thunderlord is now a decent DPS weapon. I haven't had a chance to test it thoroughly to see where exactly it ranks, but just kind of based on logic, with machine guns getting their damage boost and Thunderlord already being a decent one, it can't be bad.
Right, right.
Then there's the elephant in the room, Xenophage. It received a pretty sizable damage boost, but at the same time, they reduced its rate of fire, which is an interesting one, because now, per shot, Xenophage does absurd amounts of damage, but it fires slower, meaning that your damage per second is lower. But further than that, since it fires slower, you keep your reserves a lot longer, so it's more ammo efficient. So it's like better burst damage and better total damage, but worse damage per second.
Okay.
So Xenophage, for one, is very, very good against dealing with enemies that have really short damage windows stuff like champions, you can stun a champion and kill it with like two or three shots from Xenophage, even if you're severely underleveled. But for raid bosses, it might not be the best unless you're facing off something that does have a very long damage phase. Like Templar, for example, does have extremely long damage phases. Atheon actually does have some long phases. If fusion rifles weren't as powerful as they are this season, Xenophage would still probably be the best against enemies like that. But enemies with slightly shorter damage phases, it's not as good against. Like enemies with moderate length damage phases, it's not as good.
Right.
But for everything else, so champions on one side and Atheon and Templar on the other, Xenophage is really good still.
Right. Yeah, because I feel like definitely its DPS has gone just down to just a decent amount. Just because of the slower rate of fire, I feel like its DPS is...
Yeah, I mean, it had its rate of fire reduced by 25%. It used to be 120 RPM, now it's 90 RPM.
Yeah, so I feel like, as far as, like, DPS, personally, I feel like it went down a lot. But I feel like its overall damage has actually increased, though.
Yeah.
I felt like that was the trade-off, for sure. But, like, yeah, because... So as far as, like, in between, pretty much the two kings right now at this point, rocket launchers and linear fusion rifles, without the buff, linear fusion rifles or normal fusion rifles versus rocket launchers, which one actually comes out there?
Without buff stacking,
right?
Rocket's better for burst, fusion's better for sustain.
Yeah,
that's kind of how it's always been. That's how it'll always be. Rocket launchers have always been the king of burst DPS, and linear fusions have always been fantastic sustained DPS.
Right. And, so, like, grenade launchers as well. Like, where do they stand at this point? Because I honestly have zero idea. It's been a while since I've used one. I assume, like...
Yeah, that's one that I'm okay, also still kind of confused about. Last season, grenade launchers were really good because of breach and clear.
Right.
But now, and even then, it was really just Anarchy and Wither Horde that were used a lot.
Right.
Other grenade launchers didn't receive near the same amount of attention as those two weapons did.
Right.
And so I'm not sure where grenade launchers fall at the moment.
Yes.
In terms of damage.
Speaking of which, what happened to Anarchy? I didn't know what got nerfed about it, but it got nerfed at some point, right?
Yeah. So at the start of the season, Bungie reduced the damage it does against bosses by 20%, 25%, I want to say.
Right.
And that's it. That's all they did to it. They reduced its damage against bosses. And the thing is, in Bungie's own words, champions do not count as bosses.
So it's still really good for champions.
So it's still fantastic at dealing with champions. And it's still just really good in general. The only thing is that it's not as good now as it used to be for DPSing bosses.
Right. Well, everybody kind of thought that they were going to just Bungie it. What I mean?
They thought they were going to nerf it into the ground and make it unusable. But no, it definitely still has a lot of use.
Yeah. But not quite the old absolute monster it used to be, as far as everything goes.
Not ye old Anarchy double slug.
Right.
That's not quite as on the table anymore as it used to be.
Right. And now my question is, after this season, right? Because I like fusion rifles a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I like I said, I like Merciless. I like some of the exotic choices as well. So the thing is, after this season, when the buff for fusion rifles, like, leaves the pass, you know what I mean? Or, like, leaves the artifact?
Yeah, the seasonal mod.
Do they go back to just being absolute trash, or are they, okay?
Once particle deconstruction is out of the picture, will fusion rifles remain good DPS? That remains to be seen, because we don't know what kind of changes to fusion rifles will be coming at the end of this season, or between now and the end of the season.
Oh, okay.
Because there very well may possibly be some changes made to them later on. Not to mention, there were also some other buffs to fusion rifles this season that are outside of just particle deconstruction. High-impact frame fusion rifles had got their charge time extended, so that it takes them longer to charge, but now they only fire 5 bolts instead of 7, and each of those bolts does quite a bit more damage than they used to. Meanwhile, rapid fires, I think they increased the amount of bolts they fire from 7 to 9, but they also dropped their fire rate by a bit. And then there's also some other fire rate modifications they made to adaptives and precisions.
Yeah.
So I haven't had a chance to thoroughly test fusion rifles at the moment.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because my main thing was like wondering where high impacts ended up being, because like I'm sure in Crucible they're still like okay-ish, I guess. I mean, it's still, you know, it's still a fusion. It takes a whole second to charge it up, you know.
Second to charge it up, but also longer range.
Yeah, and so like, but the thing is, it's damage per second. Like in PvP, is literally one shot.
Yeah.
So, or I guess five, but you know what I mean, like one burst.
Yeah.
So like, my only thing is like, it would have to be doing some wicked damage per burst. You know what I mean? To be like viable. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the question on the table that I still have.
Yeah, because I know right now, if you test on the big Cabal guy in the Lost Sector or whatever, Merciless comes out to like 84k with the buff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, you take the buff away, right?
Yeah.
And if you take the buff away, let's say it takes it down, I don't actually know how much it would take it down, but like even if it takes it down to like 73, it's still really good, right? But, which I guess probably wouldn't be, I don't know, I'd have to do the math. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'd have to look into how much particle deconstruction does, because one of the interesting things about particle deconstruction is that it's not just active or it's not. There's five stacks to it, so, and I don't know exactly the timing it takes for each stack to proc. I don't know if it's like one single bolt applies a stack or what.
Right.
But I would have to do some research into exactly how much damage each stack grants and the requirements to activate each one.
Yeah. Because, like, obviously, I mean, you know me, I love sniping, but that's, like, only Crucible. I don't like sniping in PvE. I just don't see the reason. I just don't like it for some reason as much. It just doesn't feel as satisfying.
I think it's fun in PvE.
Yeah. But, like, I don't know why. Just fusions kind of hit the spot as well as, like, I mean, shotguns do sometimes, but I'm more of a, I do like fusions a lot, though, in PvE. So, like, I just kind of didn't know if they're going to go back to being to where, like, if I use a fusion, it's, you know, sad boy hours for the raid group, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're getting bit too.
I think I actually remember hearing Bungie say something about how they were going to be making more changes to fusion rifles as this season goes on and into the Witch Queen. They were going to be making more. It's just that these damage changes and the charge time stuff was the first round of changes that they were going to be making.
Right.
I think there's a little bit more on the horizon for fusion rifles, and I think that they still will definitely have a place in the PvE meta come next season in the Witch Queen.
You getting eat up too?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, I only got one on my hand, but it's kind of, I don't know what the heck got me on my hand, man.
Yikes.
By the way, for people out there who have no idea what we're talking about,
we're outside and there's mosquitoes everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah, we decided to do the podcast outside, which is why if you hear some water in the background, we're next to a creek downtown, so we're just kind of chilling over here. Also, sorry if you hear people in the background, but yeah, there's something eating us alive over here.
But, I can tell you what's eating us alive, it's mosquitoes.
Yeah, and the monster that, but like,
yeah,
it does make me wonder, like, where it's going to sit afterwards, you know what I mean? Because I'd hate to use them for one season knowing that they're just about to go and just be gone, you know what I mean? If that was the case.
Yeah. So, I think they'll still be viable in PvE come next season.
Good. So, I had a question on this as well.
Okay.
1,000-yard stare. The question is, do you think this is going to be the sniper that's going to come back with snapshot and quick draw?
Do I think that 1,000-yard stare is going to be able to roll snapshot quick draw?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah?
I'd say so. Because this is a really hyped up event that's coming up.
Right.
So, for those of you guys that might not know, this season itself of content, season 15, is supposed to be very, very long. I think it came out to about 180 days or 26 weeks, so literally half a year pretty much to the day. So there's actually going to be a non-season drop of content that happens at about mid-season in season 15, and it's going to be Bungie's 7-year anniversary, because that actually is coming up, and it's going to be a huge deal. They're adding or is it 7 years of Bungie or 7 years of Destiny? I think it's 7 years of Destiny that it is.
Yeah,
so it's going to be Bungie's year 7 anniversary for Destiny. And of course, as we all know, 7 is a very important number to Bungie. So for this year 7 anniversary, they're going to be adding a new activity to the game, like a six-player match-made activity, and they're going to be adding a new dungeon to the game, including, and one of the rewards in that dungeon is going to be Ye Olde Galahorn from Destiny 1, the undebated king of damage. But then also, at the same time, some other rewards from that bit of content includes the Ice Luna hand cannon and the Thousand-Yard Stare sniper rifle, as well as some other things that have not been confirmed yet, but, I mean, they're going to be bringing back a bunch of fan favorites. That's essentially the whole thing with this event. Yeah. And they specifically are bringing back fan favorites. So it would stand to reason that if they're bringing back these fan favorites, they would have to make them able to roll some of their old fan favorite perks and perk combinations.
Look in the chamber. Look in the chamber.
Look in the chamber.
I really want that. The question is, would Luck in the Chamber two-tap? Or would it just... Like, I feel like it would probably do that.
I didn't play Destiny 1 enough to know how much Luck in the Chamber did.
Like, so, 126.
Yeah, it might be able to two-tap, maybe.
Yeah, like, I don't know exactly, like, the damage, like, number itself, but, I mean, it would be very, very, very... Like, yeah. I'm pretty sure if you got Luck in the Chamber headshot...
I think it might be able to two-tap with, like, a Luck in the Chamber headshot and then another headshot.
Yeah.
I think you might be able to two-tap with it, assuming Luck in the Chamber is on Ice Luna, which it probably will be.
Yeah. But yeah, as far as Galahorn goes, like, obviously Wolfpack rounds, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
all that stuff.
Definitely.
The question is, what do they do to make it actually good?
That's a good question. I don't know, because Bungie said that they are going to be bringing it back stronger than ever, and it was already the king of damage in D1.
Exactly.
It has a lot to compete against in Destiny 2, and if they really want it to make the same impact in Destiny 2 as it did in Destiny 1, they got to do some dumb shit to that weapon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, especially because, like, you already got Argent Ordnance,
yeah,
right? So, like, you add, like, 30% damage buff on top of it.
Yeah.
Right? I want to know, what is this, you know...
What exactly is Galahorn going to be able to do?
Yeah, exactly. I'm working on the Deathbringer stuff still. I absolutely love that weapon, and I like Two-Tailed Fox. But, like, Galley would be... I do really want it to... I'm pretty sure everybody kind of wants to be honest, but wants it to, but I want it to come back and just blow everything out of the water. You know what I mean?
Even if it is just for a bit, as it, like, when it first launches, it annihilates everything else, and then maybe a bit into it, they nerf it just so that it's more in line with other stuff.
Right.
Maybe still at the top of the ladder, but only by one rung instead of 30.
Yeah. See, like, yeah, I would, like, don't get me wrong, I'd use Galahorn even if it was not meta. But
yeah,
that's just
even
because
if it was just its, exactly its D1 form competing against D2 weaponry.
Yeah.
But, nah,
so
I think it's going to be ridiculous.
Yeah. So, also, do you think there's other weapons to come, or is that the only three that they're going to bring back?
There's definitely going to be more than just those three.
Yeah.
I think that there's, like, a lot of really classic weapons that Bungie really... I think there's a lot of them that they're going to be bringing back for this event, because it's the 7-year anniversary. They've said that they're bringing back fan favorites. It's going to be, I mean, for one, it's going to be a dungeon, and it's going to be a new 6-player activity. There's got to be more than just two weapons that you can get from that piece of content.
Right.
Personally, I think that they may follow the standard seasonal weapon model and have 6 weapons returning, as well as Galahorn.
Right. Yeah, I think that would be pretty cool.
Ice Luna, Thousand Yard Stare, and 4 other weapons. 4 other legendary weapons. Question is, though, then, what would those be?
I don't know. As far as auto rifle... As far as auto rifle goes, I am not... I would have, like, honestly no idea. Because I know there was a couple that I liked back in D1 that were pretty cool. And as far as, like... I mean, as far as the rest goes, I'm not sure, man.
Yeah.
I literally would have no idea.
Well,
Party Crasher,
I know... Party Crasher and or Matador, maybe?
Right. Yeah, Matador 64.
I
love that thing.
I think that one is on the table for one of the weapons they could bring back. Another one, Wormwood. The Wormwood sidearm.
Right. That would be
Future
fire.
Yeah,
yeah,
I think that one might be on the table, because that was a pretty infamous sidearm.
Yeah, it was.
So yeah, Party Crasher, Wormwood, Thousand Yard Stare, Ice Luna...
Yeah, literally after that, I'm satisfied. I mean, maybe NLB. I would like to see NLB.
No Land Beyond. Yeah, a primary ammo sniper rifle. I mean, but then again, there's Dead Man's Tale. That does exist, and that's kind of like NLB 2.0.
Yes.
but an OB itself would be awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I just, you know, I used to love running that stupid thing. But, like, yeah, I definitely think, I was definitely hoping they would have, you know, some other stuff as well, even if we didn't expect it, you know?
Yeah.
I've been trying to think pretty hard of, like, auto rifles, scout rifles, other stuff like that they could bring back.
You know what they theoretically could bring back? Something I don't know how many other people have noticed this. I can guarantee I'm not the only person that noticed, but something that I don't think many people have been pointing out. Vault of Glass.
Right.
Did not return with all of the weapons it had.
Oh, right, yeah.
Atheon's Epilogue, the auto rifle from Vault of Glass, is not present in Destiny 2.
Yeah.
Neither is the Vault of Glass pulse rifle, Praetus Timepiece.
Right.
And I think there's one more, the fusion rifle. I don't remember what it was called, but the Vault of Glass fusion rifle is not present in the game. And there might have been one more. We have Hezin Vengeance.
Right.
We have the machine gun that everyone hates to get.
Yep.
We got Vision of Cornflakes.
Right. We got the shotgun, whatever the frick it's called.
Found Verdict,
yes. I was about to say, I use the stupid thing all the time.
Yeah, Fatebringer.
I love it.
And that was it. We're missing Atheon's Epilogue, Praetus' Timepiece, and the fusion rifle, but I can't remember for the life of me.
Right. I feel like I almost just said it.
Yeah.
Anyway. But yeah, there was a... I don't know. So, have they showed the armor yet?
For
the anniversary thing?
Yes.
Okay. Is it Destiny 1 style, or is it just, like, new?
It's new. Well, specifically the armor set for the dungeon. Is an armor set...
That's a very loud motorcycle. Sorry about that.
Rude. It is an armor set that is thematically inspired by the Thorn hand cannon. So it has, like, a really high-V look to it, but it's not, like, standard high of stuff, which is more like maybe brown or red and stuff like that, but it's, like, pitch black hive with glowing green parts on it.
Oh, crap. Okay. Yeah, I'll have to look at it, because I haven't seen it.
Yeah. If you look at the Witch Queen tab in the director of Destiny 2, if you go to Destiny 2, if you open the game and then go to the directory...
Right.
There's, like, that little Witch Queen symbol that's tempting you to buy the collector's edition for it.
Yeah.
If you actually click on that and the banner pops up, you can actually see, I think it's the Warlock armor set holding Gallahorn.
Holding Gallahorn?
Yep.
Oh, shoot, no.
And then for the Hunter and Titan sets, I think you can go onto, like, the Bungie website and it's there. I don't know exactly where you can find it. I know someone probably took a screenshot of the original stream, because in the stream they did show all three of them.
Right.
So if you could find the stream, it'd be there. Someone probably took a screenshot of it. You might be able to Google it. It might be on Bungie's website. All I know is that they're there. They're inspired by Thorn. They look awesome. I want them.
I'm excited.
Apparently there's also going to be a couple, like two, maybe three sets of universal ornaments as well for armor. So there's, like, more armor sets that are also going to be there. And those, I think, might be Destiny 1-inspired armor sets.
Right.
I'm not sure. I'll have to look deeper into that one. But that's one thing that's out there.
Yep. Well, it makes me, definitely makes me curious of what is going with that one.
Let me turn the tables on you, Austin.
What's up?
What are your thoughts on the glaive?
I haven't even seen the glaive. What? Oh, God.
So, in The Witch Queen, there's a new weapon archetype.
Oh, that's the hand things, right?
Yeah, the glaive.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a polearm sort of weapon.
If it's any sort of polearm, you know I'm always down.
Yeah, it's going to be a first-person melee weapon that has a full-on combo system. Okay. It has defensive abilities, and it has a projectile attack.
Interesting.
And it's a first-person melee weapon. And Bungie recently also confirmed that there's going to be three exotic glaives that are class-specific. So there's going to be there's going to be a Titan exotic glaive, a Hunter exotic glaive, and a Warlock exotic glaive.
How do you think they work, as far as ammo goes?
I have no clue. Probably like swords.
I would think it would be sick.
I think maybe... I'm trying to think. Bungie might have mentioned something about how glaives would work with their ammo efficiency. I think it's you don't need to have ammo for the glaive to draw it and use it, but your melee, like the swing speed of the glaive is a bit slower if you don't have ammo for it, and you can't use the defensive ability and you can't shoot with it, but I think you actually can still use it as a melee weapon even if it doesn't have ammo.
Right. I think that would be kind of cool.
Yeah. It looks sick.
Yeah. No, I think that would be pretty sick. The projectile system, I'd have to look at on whether it's like a beam or what exactly it is.
It's a single bolt. It's a projectile.
Oh, it's like a pew, pew.
Yeah, it's a single shot, single projectile. Almost looks like a Jotun shot, but it travels a bit slower.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a Jotun when with the projectile attack.
Interesting. Okay.
But yeah, glaives are going to be obtained in the Witch Queen DLC through the new crafting system that they're introducing. There's apparently going to be an entire system of weapon crafting added in the Witch Queen. And you're going to get glaives through crafting, as well as, of course, the other weapons from the Witch Queen. And crafting is another system I'm really looking forward to, because apparently it's going to let you hand curate exactly the weapon role you want to get.
Yeah.
And possibly even change a few cosmetic aspects of the weapon, depending on how you craft it.
Okay.
So yeah, that's one system I'm really looking forward to in the Witch Queen.
Yeah. Well, if there is glaives, as far as glaives go, it depends on how good they feel on whether or not I would use that. I'm not a huge melee weapon type of person.
Mm-hmm.
But, unless it's like a super, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's fair.
But, like, if it feels really good to hit moves with it, cool. But if it feels like I'm sort of just slicing through something, you know what I mean?
I've seen some of the combos from the glaive, and it looks pretty sick. Because there's, like, one of the combos I've seen is it starts with a stab, and then the second hit, you pull the blade out at the target, and then, like, hit the target with the back end of the glaive from the side.
Right.
And then you do, like, an overhead slash with the glaive down onto the target. So it's, like, it's like stab, tail strike, overhead slash.
Right.
And then you can still chain that into the projectile attack from the overhead.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That'll be interesting. And especially interesting to see how that looks in first person from that camera. That camera angle's hard to make work with a melee weapon. You know what I mean? In my opinion.
Yeah. First-person melee weapons are really hard to master, I believe.
Yeah.
But specifically, they did show footage of that combo in first-person, and it looks pretty sick.
Okay. I don't know. I'll have to look more into it, but I think, that would be very interesting to see.
And there's the changes to the void elements coming up in the Witch Queen. That's also a big topic of conversation that I've seen floating around the interwebs.
Right.
Sort of like the Destiny the Game subreddit, Bungie's own forums, YouTube, Instagram. Void reworks being able to use. So with Stasis, there's the slowed, the frozen, those kind of effects. With Void, there's going to be like suppression and weakening. Like suppression, weakening, and the kind of void detonator stuff that Middle Tree Sentinel currently has going on.
Right.
And then also Void is going to have like a bunch of abilities that revolve around invisibility and true sight.
Yeah. True sight will be interesting to see how it works out balance wise.
I think this might be the time where Bungie finally does a bit of sandbox separation between PvE and PvP. They might disable a lot of the true sight abilities in PvP. I'm not sure about it yet, though.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's coming in the Witch Queen. It's like half a year away. We don't know much about it. For now, at least. But...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Well,
and that again, makes me really curious what they're going to do with Solar and Arc.
Right.
Because for Solar, they could do stuff like igniting targets, causing explosions... They could do a lot of, like, burning targets, spreading fire, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, being able to place just a patch of fire on the ground that burns anything that walks through it.
Right. I would like to see some speed-based stuff with Arc. Yeah. I would like to see some, like,
movement speed, melee lunge range, melee damage.
Titan skating.
Yeah. Titan skating.
Maybe just to decide
Please,
a little
God,
bit.
No.
I mean, you can already do it. It's just not anywhere near as, like, ridiculous as it was beforehand.
Yeah.
But I never got to play with it on PC, and even if it was just for a day, I would let you play with Titan Skating and back to its like full strength on PC with that macro.
Yeah. And meanwhile, some other things that Ark might be able to do would be, like, chaining damage from one target to another. Like, maybe abilities would make a target conductive.
Right.
And then damaging a conductive target would chain damage to other ones nearby. That'd be cool. That would be interesting. Still not entirely sure how all that would work. And then there's also, in addition to all that, to add another level of confusing to it, there's going to be at least one new element being introduced in future seasons. It's not coming in the Witch Queen as far as we know, but the folks over at Destiny have actually confirmed that they are working on a fifth damage type for the game.
Oh, okay.
So they, like, the Soulfire subclasses that everyone was expecting to see in the Witch Queen were, that plan was shot down just a little bit. There was no announcement of that in the Witch Queen trailer. But we do have confirmation that there is definitely something coming. There is a fifth element that Bungie is working on, and they do plan on releasing it soon.
And Robert is praying it's rocks.
Yeah, Robert is praying that it is rocks. Man wants to become a living boulder.
That would be sick, though. I would love to have an Earthbender-style type thing going on. But yeah, I definitely think all that stuff would be pretty lit, though.
Yeah.
That would be pretty lit.
Destiny's in a pretty interesting place right now. Got a lot on the horizon, but also a lot at our feet right now.
Right. Right.
A lot of interesting story developments. This coming Tuesday is supposed to be, I think, the first week that Agar's Scepter becomes available. So Agar's Scepter is supposed to be like a stasis trace rifle.
Right.
And, you know, for the past few weeks, we've been gathering something called, like, Atlas SKUs from the Dreaming City to open up some kind of weird vault-looking thing. And apparently, I mean, there's only one terminal left. So here's to hoping that this week's set of Atlas SKUs coming up is going to be the last one we need to crack open that vault door and get our hands on Agar's Scepter.
Do we know the perk for that thing?
Nope.
Oh, so it's just going to, when it comes out, we'll just figure it out.
Yep. There's going to be an update when it comes out that will reveal its perks.
All right. Yeah, that's going to be interesting about that.
Recently, Bungie's done a lot better job of covering their own tracks and making sure that things that aren't in the game yet, like aren't obtainable in the game yet, aren't in the API either, so that they can't be found out as easily.
Yeah.
Because a lot of leakers and data miners have found things that they're not supposed to be able to find just yet.
Yeah.
In past seasons, they leaked a bunch of content. So now Bungie's doing a little bit better job of making sure that data miners won't find anything that they're not supposed to find yet.
Right.
And so the perks for Agar's Scepter are among those things.
Yeah,
we don't know what the fusion rifle is going to do. We just know it's a stasis fusion rifle.
Right.
Not fusion rifle, trace rifle.
Right.
Y'all know what I mean.
That'll be interesting to see what it does. Like, even if it just slowly freezes, you know what I mean, or something like that. Like, slowly freezing on a trace would be kind of a little bit dumb. But, like, at the same time, it'd be kind of cool, though.
It'd be really cool. To see. I mean, trace rifles are special weapons. They do require special ammo. And so, you know, Bungie has a bit more liberty versus a primary weapon that you always have ammo for. With a special weapon, you can get away with a bit more dumb stuff.
Right.
So, I think a beam that slowly freezes a target that you have it over until they're completely frozen wouldn't be out of the scope of possibility. The question is, what else would it do? Because they can't just leave it at that.
Yeah, because that's kind of boring just in and of itself. Yeah, you could shatter, but, like, that doesn't do.
Yeah, that's not as cool as a cold heart that, you know, ramps up its own damage exponentially as it's held on a target.
Right.
Or Prometheus Lens that creates literally just the sun on the ground. Or a Wave Splitter that has, like, dynamic damage. Or Divinity creates a giant crit spot, or, you know, all that jazz.
Now, what exactly? Now, cold heart, trace, all that stuff, trace rifles, how good are they for damage again? I forgot. I'm not even going to lie, I completely forgot.
Trace rifles are not in a great place damage-wise right now. They're not in a horrible place, but, I mean, they're... Yeah. It's essentially just a special ammo auto rifle.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Fair enough.
They're better for ad control and, like, dealing with with the brooms. So, it's like, auto rifles, trace rifles, and machine guns are really the...
Well, it makes me
better
wonder...
for ad clearing stuff.
In that case, it makes me wonder if... You said most of the stasis stuff is supposed to be, like, kinetic slot stasis, you know what I mean? What if it's, like, primary ammo? Like, maybe not necessarily... Oh, so it's guaranteed to be special?
It's going to be special. Trace rifles always will take special ammo. That's just how they That's just Bungie's thing with trace rifles, is that they are special weapons.
Right, right.
But stasis, elemental, primary, and special weapons are always going to be in the kinetic weapon slot.
Okay.
So that they don't conflict with your elemental weapons that are for shield breaking.
Right, okay. So there isn't going to be stasis shields?
Not yet. As far as we know, not yet. And there might not be.
Okay.
We know for a fact that there's not any right now, but yeah.
That would be ridiculous with Matt's game.
Yeah. Having to deal with four elements instead of just three.
Yeah, yeah. Or even if they, like, maybe if they limited match game to three, you know, it would make sense, but...
And then, of course, match game would also get even more insane as they add the next darkness element and possibly a third darkness element.
Yeah.
You'd have to deal with six elements.
Which would be ridiculous to have to deal with.
Yeah.
Unless they started making, like, weapons almost like they did in Monster Hunter or 1. It is, like, half solar, half this, or half that, half this.
Yeah. If they made more weapons that are, like, Hard Light and Borealis that have the ability to switch their damage type.
Right, right.
Which, actually, that would be interesting if they made maybe even a class of a suite of legendary weapons that were able to switch their damage type.
Yeah. That'd be something. I wonder what they'd make
it. That'd be really interesting. That could actually be something they could weave into the crafting system. Would be a way to augment your weapons with, like, dynamic damage typing.
Right.
So that with just the flip of a switch, you could go from doing one damage type to doing another.
The question is, what would they do at that point with Hard Light and Borealis?
Mm-hmm. Buff them.
Say what?
Buff them.
Yeah, I guess so. Just make Hard Light.
Yeah,
do
maybe.
Do double damage normally, and then four times damage when it rigged in.
Yeah, Jesus. I was thinking more along the lines of, you know, with a weapon augmentation system, you could put an additional element on your weapon, singular, and then they could also just buff Hard Light and Borealis so that they did all six, so that they added stasis and whatever other elements.
Yeah.
Whatever other elements they did. It actually would be really interesting already if they were to add stasis to Hard Light and Borealis. I think they should.
Yeah, that would be cool. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
It does make one wonder, though, especially with, like, all that stuff, like, exactly where those little, what are they called again? The melee weapons?
Glaives?
Yes, where those are going to be. Because, like, as far as, like, damage or add clear, all that stuff goes, if they're going to be useful or, it's hard to convince me of it. You know what I mean? Melee weapons versus ranged weapons, normally your ranged weapons are going to be out of, just because it's riskier to be close range, it's harder to... I would assume it's harder to attack multiple targets with the glaives. I wouldn't know.
I mean, swords already have the mechanic where you can cleave through multiple enemies with a single slash, so I don't think it'd be out of the realm of possibility for them to add that functionality to glaives, make it so that one melee attack could hit multiple enemies.
Right. Yeah, that would be something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it'll take a pretty strong weapon to make them viable, I think.
They will have to be pretty strong. I think they're definitely going to be special weapons and not primaries.
Yeah.
So they're not going to be intended to be used all the time as just a primary weapon. They're going to be situational. Question is, what situation will a glaive be best in, and how will it outshine stuff like shotguns?
Right, right. Fair enough. Just don't do what they did to Bastion and give it its own personal shield that you can shoot through.
Yeah.
But yeah. Well,
we're in an interesting place with Destiny. We got Witch Queen on the horizon coming in half a year. And we got Lightfall beyond that for year. What is this going to be? Year 6 is going to be Lightfall. And then beyond that, The Final Shape is the name of the year 7 DLC for Destiny 2.
The Final Shape?
Yep. It's, yep, the final DLC for Destiny 2, at least like the one we know about, is going to be a DLC called The Final Shape, and it's coming after Lightfall, which is coming after Witch Queen.
That will be weird.
Yeah.
We got circle, triangle, square next, question mark?
Yeah, so The Final Shape is actually a term used a lot by the Darkness. The entire objective of the Darkness is to whittle down all of existence to have only one species, possibly even just one living creature remaining, the single creature or single species that has dominated and extincted everything else.
Yeah.
And that is what the darkness believes is the perfect thing.
Right.
It is going to be the final shape of reality. That's, like, the big thing with the darkness is achieving the final shape through destruction of all inferior things.
That will be interesting, then.
And so that's the name of the last DLC, is the final shape.
That's creepy.
And what's even more wild about that is that, final shape.
Okay. Sorry, we're hitting our maximum recording time right about, in about a couple seconds here, so continue your statement.
I'll finish this up and then we'll be done. What's really wild is that the final shape is going to be the last chapter of Destiny's first saga of storytelling.
Yeah.
There is more beyond the final shape. There is an entire second saga just waiting to happen.
Yeah.
And possibly a third saga. We don't know how far Bungie plans on taking Destiny. All we know is that it is not over yet.
Yeah. It makes me wonder what exactly, like, if our Guardian's gonna die or something like that, or if we start anew, or if it's the same Guardian.
I am absolutely clueless on what Bungie has planned for the second saga. If it's going to be an extension of Destiny's current universe, if it's going to be an alternate universe, how, like, what they're going to make the major threat out to be, what is the story of the second saga going to be?
Right.
But
that would be cool.
Yeah, be really cool. That's what we have to look forward to. Witch Queen on the horizon, Lightfall, Final Shape, Destiny's second saga. That's what we've got.
Right. Alrighty. Well, thank you for being on the podcast. Sorry to cut it off. I forgot about the 60-minute limit. However,
glad to be here.
Heck yeah, bro. Well, hopefully we will have you again on soon, as soon as possible, whenever the next DLC update comes out, and I'm also completely clueless as to what the heck is going on in that one. So, but yeah, bro. Well, thank you for coming on, and I guess we will see everybody in the next one.
See you.